Hello and good afternoon. I almost said good morning. It is not the morning anymore. We're changing things up starting today. Hopefully it's consistent. But yeah, so welcome to the Rogue Transmission Podcast. I am your host, Dominic Zamora, and I'm joined by Christian Juarez.
How's it going, everybody?
Yeah, so this kind of we're gonna try this as our new schedule going forward on Sundays. Jeff is here with us, but he's more behind the scenes, as I think I mentioned the last video. Just gonna be handling the tech side of stuff from now on. That way, that stuff is up and running pretty smoothly. So he did the opening, whatnot. He'll cut to Jeff, or sorry, Christian and I, single shots, whatnot, and all that good jazz.
Also, don't even ask what's up with Christian's face. I have no idea.
Yeah, I was
It
like,
started
bro.
right when we switched the scene. It's just classic. The technical difficulties
There you
follow
go.
us wherever we go. But now it's fixed.
That's technology for you. But yeah, so as you heard, Jeff, he is still here. So he might chime in as needed when it comes to audios. You just hear his voice. You probably will never see him again on camera. Maybe. But yeah, it's all good. But yeah, so let's go ahead and get the day started. So kind of one thing I wanted to do for today was kind of like touch up on topics that we actually didn't get a chance to talk about before. And first thing on the list that I was really, really excited about was Indiana Jones 5 is finally in production. I know this video, or sorry, this film was kind of like up in the air for like the last 10 years, give or take, ever since Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. People were wondering, was there ever going to be a fifth movie? They kind of alluded to it at the end of Crystal Skull. But Indiana Jones, he's can be back with the fedora and the whip and whatnot. And there still aren't really too many details about this movie. Aside from some of the main cast members, no one knows what the plot is about. So we definitely got Harrison Ford back in the titular role of Indy Jones. But some famous names that come to the list, Christian, I don't know if you knew this, but some famous actors like Toby Jones. He's going to be in it. He was one of the German scientists from Captain America. Mads Mikkelsen, he will be in it. He actually had a quote that came out in an interview that when he read the script, that he was like, either he cried or he was like, oh no, he said the script was everything that he wanted the script to be. So that's a positive sign for me anyway. And a new announcement, or at least one of the latest ones, is that Antonio Banderas is going to be in the movie. So,
Interesting.
but again, no one knows who they're playing. You can only really guess. So for me, I'm really excited that this movie's finally coming to fruition. I'm a big Indiana Jones fan. I grew up with the movies since I was a kid. But yeah, Christian, what are your thoughts on the new movie that's finally coming out?
That's pretty crazy. I mean, I really love how like the older franchises they still are getting attention. They're still kind of getting fruition, coming to fruition so many years later. Like you said, it was like around 10 years. I really like that. I think it's really cool. I haven't seen all of the Indiana Jones, believe it or not. I've seen the first two, I think, two or three, the older ones. And then the newest one, I hadn't seen it. I think it's just the age that I was kind of like, meh. I do want to see them. I want to rewatch them over again because I love Harrison Ford. His acting, I think, is really good, and a big fan of anything he does. But I mean, that's awesome. And then Mads Mikkelsen, I love him. Whether he's going to be like a villain character or a hero character, he's so talented, and he's always kind of sinister, even if he's a good guy. Antonio Banderas is great. He can be hilarious and serious. I'm excited. I mean, who knows? We probably won't get it till probably like 3 or 4 more years, I would think, because they still have to go in pre-production and production and post. It's a lot of work, but yeah, I mean, hopefully we actually it's legitimate. We can actually get it rolling.
Yeah, so I have a theory that Mads Mikkelsen will probably be a villain. Like you said, he's always playing the sinister character. Like he was, what, the first villain in the newer James Bond films. He's Hannibal Lecter in that series. He's actually replacing Johnny Depp as, what's the guy's name? Wendelwald from the the Harry Potter, the new Harry Potter movies are coming out.
Fantastic Beasts or something like that.
Yeah. So he's replacing Johnny Depp in that one. So yeah, he always has just like this demeanor where he's a very believable villain, which I'm totally for. I have nothing against that. So I feel like he's going to play something in that role. Antonio Banderas, I feel like he's going to be kind of like a supporting character, second to Harrison. That's just my guess. Unless he's going to be another villain type character, that would be my second guess. Because I don't think Antonio Banderas has really played any kind of like evil roles per se. He's more like the good guy or like anti-hero, so to speak. But I feel like if he really wanted to, he could probably pull that off really well. So maybe he works with Matt's villain character. I don't know. And then Toby Jones, he'll probably be like another historian kind of character. That's just my guess. Because I don't know if you've seen anything, but some images have come out that are from the set. There's like a hillside where Indy is with Toby Jones. They're talking, they're pointing at something. And another one where there are images of like a train and there's the Nazi symbol, the swastika.
Oh, okay.
So some people are thinking one of two things. It's either this movie's going to take place back in World War II, or it's more of an older Indiana Jones, like even post Crystal Skull, and it's going to be flashback images.
Okay. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to think that it's more the former than the latter, just because, you know, I'm not sure if a whole lot of flashback scenes are going to make sense, but... I don't know anything.
the flashback scenes can be tricky when you put them in film. They have to be just right, you know, or just kind of just takes away from the film. So yeah, we'll see. I think those are really, like you said, the former idea I think is probably more feasible, but I think it'll be exciting either way.
Yeah, and then one other good feeling I have about this movie is that it's being directed no longer by Steven Spielberg. He stepped away, but it's James Mangold who did Logan.
Yeah,
so that would be a pretty impressive. Hopefully, you know, things will go wrong.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it could be a flop, but you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, and then actually, funny enough, my wife and I, we just did a marathon of all the indie movies like a month ago. Oh, it was so good rewatching them, even Crystal Skull. It's one of my guilty pleasure movies. I know it's not the greatest, but I still enjoy it nonetheless.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I love doing those marathon things. I did with Lord of the Rings, as you know, is my all-time favorite thing ever. It's been a while since I did Lord of the Rings, but man, like, whew, that's like nine hours of just three movies. It's crazy.
And that's not even including The Hobbit.
Yeah, Hobbit's another almost 9 hours as well. And then the extended editions of The Hobbit's like 10 hours. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, speaking of Lord of the Rings, we actually have kind of made it a winter tradition to rewatch the entire Tolkien series. So, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. We'll go in order of all those movies chronologically.
Wow. That's awesome. Have you seen the movie Tolkien? It's about his life.
Yes, when that came out, I thought that was a really nice biopic. That was just an interesting story. I knew that he fought in World War I, but just kind of like how that inspired him to just come up with these stories. And, you know, I was kind of surprised that it wasn't so much about like, you know, he has an idea, he's trying to get it made kind of thing, like published. It's more about like the psychological impact of war on his character and what
and just like what he had to put up with. And you see a these moments where it's like, oh, there's like this dark being, and then you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's going to influence this character or whatnot. But he was also, what was it, like a linguist or something? So he actually made the language.
Yeah, so that's what I loved about the movie. I mean, Nicholas Hoult, who plays Tolkien's character, did it such a great job. And because like you said, I mean, it could have gone two different ways. You know, it could have been like they do the film from the perspective that he's already established and he's writing the books and everything, you know, what made him so famous from the books. But really, they went, you know, it's like an origin story pretty much, you know, for a comic book character. You know, it pulled him from when he was a little kid. He grew up in South Africa, and his mom took him and his brother to England. And then his father passed away when he was really young. Then his mom passed away when he was really young. So he was orphaned. And then when he went to school and everything, and went to all boys school, as it was very common back in those days. And then he went to Oxford University, which is huge. And then battling a lot of his, they didn't really touch on it too much. They mentioned it a little bit in the show, but his struggle with faith in the church, but it ultimately bringing him back to the church really inspired a lot of his stories that he wrote. Mm-hmm. But the really like ingenious part of Tolkien was that he made all these languages, you know, it's crazy. He made the Elvish language, the Dwarvish language, two of the biggest ones. And then you have some of the old English that he inspired into it, and all derived from like old Celtic and Latin and all this stuff. And even in the movie, you have like the writing on the walls. And I'm like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. like the writing I have is the writing that Tolkien created, you know? And I just love the movie, and like little things. I was like, oh, that inspired that character, like you said, you know, and it's just such a great movie. And I've seen it twice now, and I have it on DVD, Blu-ray. Yeah, phenomenal. Phenomenal movie. It gives you a really cool insight on him.
Yeah, and man, and then speaking of Lord of the Rings, like that is such a beautiful fantasy world. And, you know, if you look at it from like this overall perspective, Tolkien was a genius. He created so much, and like you said, he created the language for multiple races. He wrote it. It was just all these beautiful backstories, and then not just the main characters, but just like their history, where they come from, the origin of the world and whatnot. And I remember, I think it was back in high school, and correct me if I'm wrong, Christian, because I know you're a big Lord of the Rings fanatic, as you know, as Jeff and I are with Star Wars. But I remember hearing that Lord of the Rings, like Middle Earth, was supposed to be kind of like this ancient Earth, like way back when, where like magic was prevalent, but then just something happened, obviously, and then now it's like modern day humans. Am I right to say that, or did I misunderstand something?
No, you're right 100%. Yeah, Tolkien said, you know, this is meant to, not meant to be some fantasy make-believe world. This is meant to be like very old Europe. This is legitimately Earth, you know. These were civilizations and races that were alive way before, you know, X, Y, and Z. And you know, the magic was lost in the world, and now we think of it as science or just little things like that. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, that's what I think was super cool. And he tried to ground it in reality as much as possible. And I think that's what's really cool. And like you said, you know, the overall, the fantasy aspect of it, because that's what it is. And the root of it is fantasy. But, you know, I've seen so many like memes and stuff like, without Tolkien, we wouldn't have Harry Potter, we wouldn't have Game of Thrones, we wouldn't have all these huge popular things now. And I think it's true. I mean, the languages he created and the worlds, and I mean, you look at the, you know, the Seven Dwarves with Snow White. I mean, the original Seven Dwarves were in Lord of the Rings, the kings, the Dwarven kings that were given the rings in Lord of the Rings. That inspired the creation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, which is crazy to think about. So yeah, I mean, it's awesome. That's why I love it so much. It's not just the characters, but it's just all the backstory, and like there's just the main characters, but then they have thousands of years of history. Like there's the three books, then at the end of the books there's like the appendices, which is like another 150 pages, something like that. And there's the Silmarillion, which is all the backstory, the creation of Middle Earth. You have the Iluvatar, which is basically like God, and the Astari and the Mari and all these different characters who created the world, who are like basically like gods and angels. And then you have another book like Beren and Lúthien, which is about this man and an elf who were not supposed to be together, almost like a Romeo and Juliet story. Mm-hmm. They're forbidden to love each other, and this huge story. And then there's so many books that he made. And then there's also another book that he never finished. It's the Untold Stories that his son and grandson, I believe, Christopher Tolkien, finished for him after he passed. So just it's crazy. Like nowadays, authors have such deadlines to hit and they don't have the time to be creating these vast worlds. They have the imagination, just don't think they have the time like Tolkien did.
Yeah, because that was a very different time period. You know, you didn't have as many struggles today in a modern society where it's like you're being bombarded with so many responsibilities, and it's just, you know, the way the world works is just very different.
But
you know, I've always been a Lord of the Rings fan growing up. Especially, I remember going to watch like Two Towers, Return of the King in theaters. I saw the first movie at like my cousin's house on DVD or VHS, and the music was just phenomenal.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and actually real quick, did you ever see Lord of the Rings in concert when it came I want to say like 10 years ago
when it's like they had like the film in the background but they have the orchestra in front? I went to something like that, but it was just the orchestra. They didn't have the film playing in the background. It was just like the strictly music. I saw that. That was cool.
Dude, they had it here at the Save Launch Center. They played the movie and there was the orchestra. And I went with some friends. We got like free tickets. It was my freshman year in college and we were in choir and the teacher was like, hey, I got free tickets for this event. You're all getting one. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, the orchestra, the opening scene when they're attacking Mordor and all the orcs.
Oh yeah.
Boom, dude. I'm getting goosebumps right now just remembering it.
It's Howard Shore does a phenomenal job scoring all six of those movies, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. It's just beautiful. I literally listened to the sound. I have five of the six movies, the score on CD. I'm trying to get them on vinyl. Lord of the Rings soundtrack on vinyl is like $300. It's expensive. And then I have them all on Spotify too. So I literally periodically listen to them because they're just, a lot of the music's so calming and it's just so beautiful and just a great, great soundtrack.
Yeah, it really is. And then it's just like so beautiful. It really sets the tone, like certain characters, like Galadriel, whenever she comes on screen, it's same music every time. And you're like, you know, there's something mystical about this woman, not just because the way she looks, but also just the music. It's just this ominous and it's just like, so mystical about this character. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, man. Yeah, she's one of my favorite characters for that reason, you know, like the way they put her dress and everything and they twist it a specific way so it's like just perfectly draped, and then the lighting always, yeah, it's always illuminating her, and then the music is just so beautiful. And like I remember when The Hobbit came out, the first Hobbit, and she's in Rivendell and meets Gandalf and all of them, and he's just like, and even Gandalf is just like, he's like, oh my gosh, like I'm a wizard but dang, she's beautiful, you know. And it's just a cool scene.
Speaking of that, I've always got the feeling that there was like a former/forbidden love interest with those characters. Is that ever established in any of the stories, or am I just overthinking it?
I don't remember. I'm sure if anybody's listening who knows about this will correct us, but I don't remember if there's anything. I mean, it was just like a mutual, what I can remember, it's a mutual respect and love for each other, you know, that they're both guardians of Middle Earth. Galadriel being an elf and Gandalf being a wizard, but also he's one of the Maiar, which are kind of like lesser gods. This is as simple as I can make it. And there's a certain part, and I think it's in the third Hobbit movie, it's the second one, I don't remember, but there's a scene where Gandalf gets trapped in Dol Guldur, where Sauron and is the sorcerer, the necromancer, is building his army, and he gets trapped in there, and Galadriel goes and saves him, which is a big scene, and it happens in the book. I don't think it happens in The Hobbit. I think it's in Lord of the Rings, but I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, it's just like this love for each other that they had, but it wasn't like I don't think it was a romantic love. It was just, you know, just like two, like a brother and sister, just cared deeply for each other and acknowledged who each other was. And, you know, they saw how, especially Gandalf, saw how amazing and beautiful and great Galadriel was, which was awesome, you know, and they really did a good job in the movies. But, you know, just Gandalf like being so sweet to her, like, you're like the most beautiful, precious light, you know, kind of thing. And it was like, oh, that's so cool. It was like, you know, it's awesome. But I don't think it was like a forbidden love or anything, but I mean, you're not wrong in saying that, though, because it's definitely kind of has that vibe.
Yeah, because I always had that sense since like the first movie, the first Lord of the Rings, and then a little bit more with the Hobbit and that scene that you just referenced. Just because, like, you know, like the way they touch hands and whatnot, and I don't know, that's just the vibe I got. That's just me. That's my headcanon. There was a love interest there maybe at some point in the last 1,000 years.
Yeah, they're very close, and Galadriel's like freaking like 9,000 years old in the time of Lord of the Rings. And Gandalf at least that. So yeah,
speaking of a little bit more of the lore, I know we're going on a real big tangent here.
I told you, man, it's gonna happen.
And I'm cool with it. A couple months ago I came across, just by one, and I forgot what prompted me to maybe look it up, but there was this YouTube channel that was talking about the mythos of Lord of the Rings, and it goes over like certain characters, how you said the main god. And for me, it cleared up a lot of plot holes, so to speak, because there are times where like even Gandalf says like servant of Morgoth or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who is this Morgoth? Or what are these other like ages, right? Like the first age, the second age. And, you know, all these bigger characters like Sauron, and it helped clear up that there's like this overall god, the creator, basically, and he creates like the lesser gods to help fill the world. And then some of these people, they create some of the races and the other lands and whatnot. And I'm like, oh, this is freaking fascinating stuff. I wish they would have touched on this a little bit more in the movies. And I know there's not a lot of time for everything. But for me, I'm like, it really cleared up a lot of details, and I'm glad for that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of channels. I mean, there's Men of the West is one of the biggest ones. There was one, I forget their original name, but they got copyrighted by the Tolkien Society and their other like parent company. Then they made another channel, and then they made a third channel because the second one got flagged again, so... But yeah, there's a lot of issues with that. I mean, like, the best thing, if you really want to learn all the lore, YouTube videos are great, but if you want to get like everything, The Silmarillion is the best book. I mean, like, you think Sauron is this evil like crazy dude, like he's just a little baby of Morgoth, and
it's
insane.
Yeah, because like I thought Sauron was the big baddie because that's what they make him out to be. But no, he's just like this henchman who happened to climb through the ranks. But he was like, what, the lieutenant or something of Morgoth?
Exactly.
And Morgoth is like the bigger god. And then something happens with Morgoth. So then Sauron comes in and he kind of like fills the space. And then he's just, you know, trying to take over the world kind of thing. But I'm like, oh, damn, there's a bigger badass than him. Oof, man, I hate to piss off that guy.
Yeah, seriously, man, because... You know, you have the creation of Middle Earth, and Iluvatar is basically God, and he creates all these lesser gods, like you mentioned. And the lesser gods, you know, it's very big quotes because, I mean, they're the most powerful ones. Like you have the god of music, and you have the god of creation, and you have different gods for different tasks, you know. Mm-hmm. And one of them was Morgoth, whose original name was Melkor, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, he started creating his own beings, and they were dark beings corrupted, and he would use the beings that were already created in the world, not Middle Earth, but in the world, to create them, to use them for dark deeds and things like that. And then, of course, the other gods and Iluvatar saw that as bad, and they cast him out. And then all this stuff, all this betrayal and everything, it's a whole huge story that's going on. And so then he moves to Middle Earth after thousands of years. Morgoth moves to Middle Earth, and he has more armies that he's building and everything like that. And he's defeated many times, and he starts kind of doing lesser conquests of Middle Earth. And like you said, Sauron is one of his biggest lieutenants, one of his most powerful lieutenants. And he unleashes him in Middle Earth and causes all this destruction. And now Sauron's really the one in charge. And then you have everybody else, like you have the first age, the second age, and that's what I'm excited about. The Amazon series is going to be I believe it's in the first age, first or second age, which is thousands, many thousands of years before Lord of the Rings. So it'd be really cool to see what they do. The only characters that will be in the Amazon series that will be, that would have been in Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, is going to be Galadriel, because she's 9,000 years old, Lord of the Rings. Obviously not the same actress, but.
But what about, because yeah, that's another good thing to point out, is that there's the Amazon series, which they just wrapped up season one in terms of filming, mm-hmm. and they already announced season two. So I'm like, okay, so they have confidence in the series. They know there's a huge fan base for it. But so Galadriel, she would be one character, but what about Elrond? Wouldn't he be alive too?
Yes, he would. But I haven't heard confirmation of him being in it. That's why I didn't mention it. Because, let's see. The Third Age is where Lord of the Rings takes place. And 3,000 years before that was the Battle of the Last Alliance, which is where the first one picks up. The first movie picks up. After. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember when that is. I think it's in the Second Age. So if it's in the First Age, then I'm not sure.
So then, knowing your, so I'm going to pick your brain a little bit. So knowing your vast knowledge of Lord of the Rings, where do you think this series is going to really take place? Where is it going to go?
So there's the elven city of Gondolin. They might talk about the fall of Gondolin, which was a huge battle between the elves. And it was like the Black Numenoreans, which is another. So way back when, there was kingdoms of men before Gondor was ever a thing, before we see that in Return of the King especially. There's northern kingdoms all the way up by Rivendell and where all the elves live. And I'm thinking it's going to talk about the Black Numenoreans, who are men who are corrupted by Sauron, and specifically the Witch King. So if you remember the Witch King in Return of the King, he has, you know, the big old helmet. He's the one who stabs Frodo in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Him. So he was the Witch King of Angmar, which is another kingdom that was up there in the north. So it might introduce the Witch King when he was first a servant of Sauron. That might be a thing that they talk about. I'm thinking the fall of Gondolin, because did you see that picture that they teased of season one?
I did, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people are thinking that city is the city of Gondolin, which was one of the most powerful cities at the time. Vast, huge superpower of military in the Tolkienverse, if you want to call it that. So that's what I'm thinking what's going to be. Other than that, I mean, we might see like the origin of like the Nazgul and the Ringwraiths a little bit, because that was around that time. What I'm really excited for is just like the height of the elven power. That's what I want to see, you know, because we see it a little bit in the Lord of the Rings.
But they're just kind of dwindling. They're not trying to get too involved in any of the alliances. Because even like Two Towers, you see the army come in, but it's only like 2,000 troops. And that's just, that didn't seem as much as like even the opening scene of Lord of the Rings 1. We had all the armies of men and elves, and just like thousands and thousands of them. And it's just like, ooh, you know, the elves are kind of on the side now.
Yeah, and so, like, when you remember in The Hobbit, the Battle of the Five Armies, that huge army that Thranduil has? So that's more of, like, the power of the elves. But even then, like, there's just this, like, a huge, immense power that the elves had early in the first, second age. Because the elves were the first people to inhabit Middle-earth. And that's an overgeneralization, because you have, there's, like, different types of elves. So you have the high elves and then the
wood elves.
The wood elves, but then you have the Noldor, and then even below, above the Noldor, there's like three other ranks, and it's like, I'll have to show you guys later on. There's a huge hierarchy, a map in the Silmarillion that shows the hierarchy of the elves, and it's escaping me right now. But it's like ridiculous, honestly. But like, mm-hmm. that would be awesome to see, like, their huge power, and again, Galadriel, the height of her power and how she was when she was younger. And we might see baby Elrond, you know, young teen Elrond. So that'd be cool. And again, the High Kings of.
Yeah, I would, if I had to guess, it would probably be something with like the Witch King of Angmar, but when he's like a human. So kind of leading to his downfall of when he becomes a servant of Sauron. So really, I think it's like, I think it would be important to like allude to the big baddie of Sauron, but not have him be the main antagonist, just more just like the other people involved, like the Witch King and the other nine or eight kings, how they fell kind of thing. And I'm really looking forward to big battles. I love those big spectacles in all the movies, you know. It's I think they're all really beautifully crafted. So I'm looking forward to see what comes up in the Amazon series.
Definitely, me too.
All right. So we don't have too much time left. So let's go on to, I think, one final biggish topic that we're not just bouncing around. So you and I finally have seen Black Widow.
Yes.
That is a movie that was a long time coming. We knew it was in production for a while. We knew it's been done for a while. Mm-hmm. And it was just because of COVID. They just kept pushing it back. It's going to be theatrical release. It's going to be streaming release. Well, it finally came out to both. And I went to go see it in theaters with my wife. My overall thoughts, I thought it was a really nice movie. It had some good action sequences. But in terms of story, I feel like it was way overdue, you know, for this kind of character to have gotten her own movie. And the timing of it, oh man, I feel like it's kind of like a slap to the face to the Black Widow character, because she dies in Avengers Endgame to then get her kind of like, not necessarily an origin story, but it's more of like a certain story arc to the character finally comes to a close. But that comes after her death. It's just like, I think they could have timed this movie and its release way better. Not to say that, you know, COVID was a big issue. I'm saying that, you know, this movie should have come out like 3-4 years ago before Endgame ever did.
Yeah, so that was a big thing I thought about yesterday. I just saw it last night. I went with my dad. And like if it would have came out, like, you know, they introduced Black Widow Iron Man 2. If they would have done it right after Iron Man 2, that would have been really cool, you know, origin story of Black Widow. But then obviously they didn't know the popularity of the character, but then you never really know, you know, when they did Captain America 1. But again, Captain America is such a bigger character than Black Widow. Mm-hmm. But now, I really enjoyed it, you know. Maybe I'm still on the high of the movie. I give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's up there with some of the better Marvel movies, but it's not the best. It's not the worst. I definitely want to watch it again. It was a fun movie. I'll give it that. I really enjoyed it. The first half was just like, you know, spy James Bond movie, which I loved. I love those kind of movies. I thought it was just really cool. I just absolutely loved it. Second half, just kind of a classic Marvel movie. And I mean that in two ways. It's a good and bad thing, you know. Good because, like, it's like the superhero feel and it's the Marvel feel. But kind of bad because it's just like, oh, that's how they're going to end it. That's what they're going to go with kind of thing. Like, Taskmaster. I don't know how much you know about Taskmaster. Obviously, it was a woman in this one. No problem with that. Really interesting surprise at the end. I know it's Antonia, the dude's daughter that Black Widow supposedly killed, blew up. Mm-hmm. But then I was just kind of like, oh shoot. But then I'm like, okay, kill her. You know, like, like have an awesome like battle sequence and everything like that. And like Taskmaster and the Red Guardian have a kind of a cool, you know, fight scene. But then at the end when the Red Room crashes and it's just Black Widow and Taskmaster fighting, that like Taskmaster attacks her with a sword and she like blocks it and then takes off her helmet and then like punches the thing. That was it. And like, you have to save everybody. Like, I don't know. Because Taskmaster, I know him from the comics. And then if you play the Spider-Man PS4 game, he's in that one for a little bit. And then if you play the Avengers game, he's in the campaign and you fight him and Black Widow and him fight each other. And like, I just wanted Black Widow to just kick his butt, you know, but she doesn't. It was kind of like, that was a letdown for me.
Yeah, when it comes to Taskmaster, well, I'm going to say it's a little bit controversial, but whatever. I am personally not a huge fan of gender swapping kind of stuff. For me, it's more like, if that's what the character is, like, stick to it.
And there's other versions of this too. But then again, at the same time, if there's this whole multiverse aspect to it, within one universe, it's a guy. This one, it could be a woman. Okay, fine. You know, call it a day. But I didn't know too many details aside that it was like this copycat like villain where he like really studies like his opponent. And that's where I was just like, oh, like he's pulling off Captain America moves or whatever, Black Widow moves. So I thought that was really cool. I do think that it does serve as a bit of a closure for the Black Widow character in terms of her story arc, because she kept alluding to like what Avengers 1, where like she had like blood on her ledger or something, and then she alluded to the somewhat big baddie in her movie. I forgot the guy's name. And so I thought that was nice to finally get that closure, clarity of what her past was so bad, like what was so dark about it. And then also it kind of like humanizes her character even more, because like she had a family, but it was like a surrogate family, and just not a whole lot of good history there. And it was kind of nice to see that, you know, her story kind of came full circle with everybody, but it was also kind of sad because everyone had like a dark past, and you know what, how do you move forward from all that stuff? So I thought that was still kind of a nice touch. And then with the Red Guardian, I thought it was just kind of like a funny character, because I thought it was an interesting like knockoff of Captain America, so to speak. And I thought he was gonna be more of a badass in his fight sequences, but it's like this guy was just like getting his ass beat and just like back and forth by Taskmaster. Yeah. I'm like, come on, man. Like, you have super strength. You should be able to take this guy on. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. And you know, Red Guardian, you know, he was the Soviet Union's first and only super soldier. And, you know, yeah. And like the beginning of the movie, like he throws like the freaking like steel or like iron dumpster. And then I just show these, like when he's arm wrestling, breaks that dude's hand or whatever. And I'm like, he could have, like, he may be slow because he's gained some weight and he's older now, but like, he could have at least punched Taskmaster once and like made him go flying. Like, instead of making him, he looked useless, you know, like he was just there as a character. Going back to Taskmaster real quick. Yes. So I knew that he has photographic memory, and so that's how he's able to study his subjects and stuff. But in the movie, it was made it seem like it was just like all like robotic.
A machine.
And, yeah, exactly. And I was just kind of like, it just cheapened the character to me. You know, Taskmaster's, he's a skillful, like he's already a good fighter just alone, but he has a photographic memory and he can mimic everybody. And that's what makes him crazy, is that he does the same moves as Captain America, Black Widow, Black Panther. When he does the claws, that was crazy. Hawkeye's bow and arrow, all that stuff.
Yeah, because he was pulling off all these moves, she was pulling off all these moves. But I remember in the PS4 game, because that was my first and only introduction to Taskmaster before this movie. And when you come across him as a character, he keeps saying like, "Oh, I'm studying, like I know all your moves," kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. But in this movie, yeah, it was very robotic, where it was just kind of like ingrained into if she had a chip or something or whatever. Yeah. It didn't feel really authentic. It was just more like this machine was programmed with all of these fighting styles, and just she just knew how to counter in certain situations, how to fight, you know, Red Guardian and whatnot. I wasn't too fan of that aspect, but it was still kind of cool to see. Hawkeye's abilities come in, or Black Panther. So like that was a nice touch overall.
Yeah, like even when he or she, again, she kicks the shield and she grabs it like this, just like Captain America does. And when she pulls out the knife, she starts fighting just like the Winter Soldier fought Cap and Winter Soldier. Like you said, I mean, so robotic. It made it feel like, you know, in Civil War when at the end of the movie, Cap and Iron Man are fighting each other. Mm-hmm. And Friday's like, you can't beat him hand to hand, and so Iron Man starts analyzing his fight patterns, and then he's able to block it. It kind of felt like she was like Iron Man kind of thing. And it, like I said, it cheapened it a little bit for the character Taskmaster, but it was still awesome. Like, she was, I love seeing the moves, and like when Taskmaster and Black Widow both, they're on the floor and they both jump up the same exact way, or like they both do the same pose and everything. That was cool.
Yeah, it was almost kind of like a psychotic, creepy moment where it's just like, you've literally met your match, and it's like, how do you fight yourself, kind of thing. So that was definitely definitely cool to watch.
And that's what I wanted to see, like a unique way Black Widow was gonna like take her down, but she just like, she's like, oh, I'm not gonna fight you, and then somehow just presses the button on Taskmaster's arm and releases the mask. I was like I wanted to see some like really intelligent way Black Widow was gonna do something.
Yeah, and that was also another thing too, where just like, I kind of would have liked to see, so like, real quick, I'm not gonna go too far off topic, but how far are you on Bad Batch? And this is related.
Like third episode in.
Okay, so yeah. Damn, I forgot which episode that was, so I'll try not to say too much.
I mean,
or let me say that you've seen season 7 Clone Wars, right?
What specifically? It's been out so long.
Where Order 66 is given, oh, and okay, Ahsoka's on the show. Okay, so what I'm getting at is that, so like in that episode, Rex gets the order to kill Ahsoka, but you see him struggling, right? He's really trying hard to control.
Want to. Yeah.
So what I would like to have seen more with Taskmaster is that instead of being like just this weird mind control thing, like I would have wanted her to see a little bit more, just like her try to fight the machine part of her or whatever to overcome whatever, and just like for her just to be normal, because by the end of the movie she's like, I'm free or something, like you freed me from his control or something like that. And I'm like, if I would have seen a little bit more humanity early on, like I would have been more emotional about this.
Yeah, and she's like not even upset at Black Widow that Black Widow tried to kill her or anything, you know?
Yeah. So I'm just like, oh, where's a little bit more of the humanity with this character? Come on, give me a little bit more.
And that's because clearly, saying, like the last half, it's like so Marvel, and it's just like they take out the humanity a little bit and just like less emotion. I'm just like, come on, I need more. Whereas the first half, I was like almost in tears all the time.
Yeah, and it's just like you see what she had to do as a character to like, what was her challenge? What was her obstacle and her biggest regret? Like that's her struggle. So then just like there's clearly a key character in the movie, but you don't give him that humanity. It's just like, well, maybe that was the point of it. You know, the strip of the humanity, but oh man, that's why I would have wanted to see a little bit more.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's why I question, like, do they really need to make Taskmaster, like his daughter? Like, do they really need to do that? It could have been just like the actual character in the comics. It could have been this mercenary that he hired to protect him, and Black Widow just destroys him at the end of the movie. Like, that's all we need, like just a throwaway villain. Like, we had the main guy, you know, I forget his name, we had him, he was the big villain. Taskmaster didn't have to need this story of who he was or she was. I don't know, that's just my take on it.
Yeah, because then with the whole Taskmaster thing, like you're really changing up a lot more about the character that, like you said, it cheapens the character a little bit. It might be a disservice, where a lot of hardcore fans would be like, no, they're really even more pissed off. You know, it's just like, ah, man, this character had a lot of potential, and then that's it. They're out, maybe. She'll probably come back in a future movie of some sort. Because, like, yeah, at the end of the movie, they go off. It's a nice, beautiful sunset of a moment with all the surviving Black Widow assassins and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. And I guess this movie then sets up, in that post-credit scene, it sets up, I guess, the Hawkeye show, which is interesting.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. So did you watch Falcon and Winter Soldier all the way through?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know at the very end, I think it's the second to last episode and then the last episode, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, Madame Hydra Valentina, I think her name is, she like talks to I forget his name, the U.S. agent, you know fake Captain America. She recruits him and he has like the black suit, which is the U.S. agent suit. And then in Black Widow, at the end of Black Widow, she tells Yelena, Black Widow's sister, like, this is your next target, it's the guy who killed your sister Natasha, and it's Hawkeye. So really interesting. And so what, Black Widow was filmed at least 2 years ago, I think?
I think so.
And so they just finished Kate Bishop, or Hawkeye, whatever they're calling it, this past year, like this 2021. And it's going to be coming out in November on Disney Plus. So that'll be really interesting how much they're going to incorporate it. To me, like, I would want it like half the season to be Yelena trying to hunt him down. But what I really think it probably like the last episode that's going to touch on it and be very brief. In reality, I think that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, because I don't know anything that's supposed to be like story-wise with Hawkeye. I know it's going to be him and his daughter, like he's showing her the ropes and whatnot, because I think she's a character in the comics as well in terms of like being a badass and whatnot, mm-hmm. Which is cool. But if it's like a last episode kind of thing where, yeah, she just comes in and then, oh, then that's a cliffhanger. Then that's like season two. Then we have to wait longer for that story arc to come into play. I would think it's more of she's going to be after Hawkeye, and he just doesn't know who she is and whatnot. I think that makes more sense story-wise because they just alluded to it in this post-credit scene. But I don't know about Hawkeye as a character. I don't know what his villains are, you know, what could possibly come out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it like, you know, in the Endgame, you know, Sam Wilson got the shield from Cap. And look at how long it took from Endgame to Falcon Winter Soldier to actually see Sam use the shield. So it might be, I hope it's not that same thing. Of course, we had COVID in the middle of it. But yeah, the show, Kate Bishop, in some comics, he's not her daughter. And she's just another person who Hawkeye passes the bow, so to speak. But in this one, it is his daughter. And I don't know his villains. I know he works with Ant-Man a couple times, but I doubt Ant-Man's gonna be incorporated in it. I don't know his villains or anything. I'm really excited. I really like Hawkeye. I really like Jeremy Renner. I'm spacing out on the girl who's playing Kate Bishop, but she's a great actress. I don't know if you saw Bumblebee. She did phenomenal in that movie. So I'm excited for that show.
Yeah, so am I. I watched Falcon and the Winter Soldier, watched Loki, watched pretty much all the current ones, and I really like Loki and Falcon and Winter Soldier. I wasn't a big fan of WandaVision. That one was just like, it was a little crazy in its own way. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I was curious of what the climax of the movie was going to be and how that sets up the rest of the MCU. That was my biggest takeaway from it.
Yeah, the whole multiverse.
Yeah. And then I think Hawkeye was confirmed that's gonna come out later this year,
November.
Fall winter time. So I think it's great. Dang, that's like 3-4 shows in 1 year. Damn.
Yeah, dude. And then not to mention, so Black Widow, what came out in July, September, mm-hmm. Shang-Chi comes out, Eternals comes out in November. We just have What If mm-hmm. that just came out this past week. It was another show from Marvel. And then Kate Bishop in November. That's a lot of movies and it's a lot of Marvel content.
Yeah, and then it's a lot of good stuff. I don't really know much about Shang-Chi, except that it's gonna deal with the Ten Rings and the Mandarin, that Iron Man
and Iron Man 3.
Yeah, Iron Man 3 alluded to, and they just like botched the character, but I think that was on purpose. That wasn't supposed to be the true Mandarin. It was just some name that they took on. I wonder if they're gonna allude to the third movie and be like, "Oh yeah, that guy, that was not the Mandarin, I'm the Mandarin," or whatever bullshit they want to do.
Well, I remember when Shang-Chi got originally released, they're like the Ten Rings has been hidden in all the almost not all of them, but since the beginning. So like in Iron Man 1, when they capture Tony Stark in the cave, mm-hmm. if you look when they're like put him on the video camera to send out to the news or whatever, Tony's like in the middle, has all the guys behind him. And they have a banner behind them, and on the banner it has the Ten Rings on it.
Okay.
So the Ten Rings has been the secret organization since the beginning of the MCU. So like, it shows the ingenious of Marvel, especially when you compare it to like people like DC. Unfortunately, is that they've been planning the Ten Rings since the beginning. Whether they meant to do a Shang-Chi movie from the beginning or not, it's been planted since then, which is crazy.
Yeah, because it's all those nice Easter eggs throughout all the movies. It's all interconnected. And I love mm-hmm. that kind of world building because it gets you more invested as an audience member. Like, there's an importance here. Mm-hmm. Like, that's connected to this and that and that. I love those kind of worlds. And that, like you said, DC, it's doing a crappy job of,
poor DC.
You know, that's another discussion for another day.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to Eternals, real quick, I'm really looking forward to that movie because it's like these powerful beings, like gods. That's how I want to think of them as. And they've just been like overseeing things without getting too involved. And I'm like, I want to see all these characters. Like, I want to see what mm-hmm. they're all about.
Yeah, they're pretty much the guardians of Earth, you know. The Eternals, and like by the name, they're eternal. They don't die, they're immortal. I believe that they can be killed by each other or by physical ways, I think. I'm not sure. But yeah, they're super powerful. They're not the most powerful beings in the MCU, if I'm not mistaken. But they're very powerful. And the cast is amazing. Really excited about that. I mean, Selma Hayek and...
there's two Angelina people from Jolie, Game of Thrones.
Kit Harington, the guy who played Robert Stark, I believe. I don't know his name. He's a great actor as well. Kumail Nanjiani. Kit Harington, yeah, Jon Snow.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know his name.
Yeah, Kit Harington. He's not, I don't think he's one of the Eternals, though. Yeah, just it's a star-studded cast. I'm really excited. Really interesting. And there's, like, the trailer played yesterday at Black Widow. And he was like, now that Captain America's gone, who's going to be, and Iron Man's gone, who's going to lead the Avengers? And one of the guys is like, I can do it. They just all laugh at him. So I think it's going to be funny. Yourself. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. That'd be interesting. And it'd be cool to see if they interact with like people like Thor.
And, you know, yeah, because like, cool. It's crazy because like Thor comes from this background where it's like he knows there's other powerful beings out there, mm-hmm. but like if the Eternals aren't part of that knowledge, like it's like, oh, who are these guys? It's like, oh, we're more powerful than you. It's just like, oh,
yeah, that'll be interesting. And I'm excited that Thor is still in it. You know, one of the main three is still alive. You know, obviously we have a new Captain America, but the OG Thor is still in it. So I can't wait for Love and Thunder. That's another tangent, but.
Oh yeah, a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. But yeah, that will do it for today's episode of the podcast. I think it's episode 39. Jeff, you're the one that keeps track more than I do, so feel free to verbally chime in if you want. But if not, we're going to stick to 39.
Yeah, I think he fell asleep. So
this, yeah. So he's just chilling there. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Today we'll catch you hopefully again next Sunday. You can find us here at the Digital Century C tag, Facebook, Instagram. Twitter, all that good stuff. We're trying to be more active with social media, all thanks to Christian here, actually. Thank you, Christian.
No problem.
Any last words before we sound off?
Nope. Catch us on the next weekend, next podcast. We're excited. Happy to be here. Hope you guys all have a great day.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.